The one thing we can't choose is our family history. The narrative that formed our grandparents and our great-grandparents, our parents and our own young selves. Those narratives, those backstories, are bequeathed to us and we have no choice in them. They can be filled with love and grace and acceptance and joy. They can be filled with pain and abuse and betrayal and anger and sadness. For most of us, our stories are a complex mixture of both. And they shape who we are and how we see the world and how we react when things happen. Family stories are powerful shapers of who we are, for better or for worse. In the reading from Joshua today, the people of God have spent 40 years in the wilderness and more years fighting against the powerful armies that didn't want them to settle in the land. Some of those stories are pretty problematic. Joshua tells the people their story, a Reader's Digest version. The story of God's love and liberation, the God who chose them, a story of an enslaved people of no account called to be a great nation, and that they had a choice to make. And here is what Joshua shared with them. Then Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem, and summoned the elders, the heads, the judges, the officers of Israel, and they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, long ago your ancestors, Terah and his sons Abraham and Nahor, lived beyond the Euphrates and served other gods. And then I took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan and made his offspring many. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau. I gave Esau the hill country of Seir to possess, but Jacob and his children went down to Egypt. Then I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt with what I did in its midst, and afterwards I brought you out. When I brought your ancestors out of Egypt, you came to the sea, and the Egyptians pursued your ancestors with chariots and horsemen to the Sea of Reeds. When they cried out to the Lord, God put darkness between you and the Egyptians and made the sea come upon them and cover them, and your eyes saw what I did to Egypt. Afterwards, you lived in the wilderness a long time. Then I brought you to the land of the Amorites, who lived on the other side of the Jordan. They fought with you, and I handed them over to you, and you took possession of their land, and I destroyed them before you. Then King Balak, son of Zippor of Moab, set out to fight against Israel. He sent and invited Balaam, son of Beor, to curse you, but I would not listen to Balaam. Therefore, he blessed you, so I rescued you out of his hand. When you went over the Jordan and came to Jericho, the citizens of Jericho fought against you, and also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I handed them over to you. I sent the hornet ahead of you, which drove out before you the two kings of the Amorites. It was not by your sword or by your bow. I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and towns that you had not built, and you live in them. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive yards that you did not plant. Now, therefore, revere Yahweh and serve God in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your ancestors served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve Yahweh. Now, if you are unwilling to serve Yahweh, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." A number of years later, Jesus was given the possibility of land and power as well. Here's how he responded.
This reading is from Matthew. "The devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to him, 'All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me.' Jesus said to him, 'Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him.'"
"Choose this day whom you will serve." Back before Barb and I had kids, we ran several bicycle camps out of Covenant Hills in Cabot. Sometimes we toured with the kids around Vermont. Sometimes up in the Northeast Kingdom, the White Mountains, Southern Quebec. Always a good time. We always took about a dozen kids. And we also would bring a water safety person that Covenant Hills provided, so that if we ran into a creek or a pond, we could jump in on a hot day. Over the course of the week, we would cycle hundreds of miles, and we would learn many, many, many family stories that shaped these young people. And we tried to open up possibilities for their choosing their own next chapters that were their own narrative, their own story, that would grow out of their family narrative, but didn't have to be continuations of their family narrative, especially if their family narrative was pretty destructive. They could go beyond the script and the choreography that had been written for them. They could choose their narrative. One year, for a water safety person, we got this delightful young man named Jens, who was from the recently liberated East Germany, which was going through amazing changes with the Berlin Wall, coming down the year before. One of my Danville youth group members was distraught when she heard on WCAX that they were tearing down the Berlin Mall. But we asked Jens how things were different since the wall came down. And he said, "Before, we had money, but we weren't allowed to travel, and there was nothing to buy. Now we can travel, and there are things to buy, but we don't have any money." Half a century of Soviet-style oppression had deeply affected three generations of Jens's family. It was a powerful narrative, a painful story that shaped him. And we got to hear a lot of awful stuff. Anyway, on the first day of our bike trip one year, we were in St. Johnsbury. We were heading out to our first night's camping out in Concord, Vermont. And we stopped at the grocery store in St. Johnsbury, to get ingredients for dinner. And I went to produce, and I said, "Cool, Jens, could you go get spaghetti sauce? And I'll get all the noodles and stuff and salad fixings. So I got all my stuff. I got the salad fixings. I got noodles for the spaghetti dinner. I got graham crackers and Hershey bars and marshmallows for s'mores. And I'm looking around, and where's Jens? Where? I thought he'd be at the checkout. He's not there. I walked around and walked around and walked around, and I found him in the spaghetti sauce section, where he was just standing there, paralyzed by the sheer volume of choices before him. It looked kind of like this for him. I don't think there was actually that much in St. Johnsbury, but for him it was all these choices of things that are essentially nearly the same product, but was absolutely paralyzed by which one to get. Family stories are powerful. We can go to the next one there, thank you. My dad's family story, besides that awful story with Vera's death and never getting a birthday party again, my dad's family was, I thought the family story was powerfully affected by generations of poverty in Kansas Dust Bowl farming. And it made for family rules, like playing it safe and staying put. Staying in Kansas was part of the family narrative. You don't go off and abandon your people. For my father to go to Kansas University in Lawrence on a Navy ROTC scholarship and then head off to travel the world with a new family broke all sorts of rules. Now, there was good stuff that came out of that family history as well, a deep sense of loyalty and hard work and just being a good man. My father knew how to be a good man. Our family stories are complex. They are bestowed upon us. We don't have a choice with what we get. And as I look around here, I see the thought bubbles coming up. You're thinking of family stories in your own life. And I see some wistful smiles, and I see some very concerned scowls. Because we all have a mix. Our family stories are what allow us to begin a life together. The stories we create together are what allow us to belong into a family. And the narrative that we add to it allows us to become something more. Family narratives are what help us to begin and to belong and to become a person and part of a people. And we see this happening in our reading from Joshua. Joshua acts like a really good CEO in this reading. He does four things. The first is he gives them a narrative. That fairly long story, but pretty short compared to, you know, the five books that he was going through. He gives a narrative that says, this is who you've been, for better or for worse. He talked about the heroes of faith, like Abraham and Sarah. He talked about their being enslaved in Egypt. You've got both. He gives them a narrative. This is who you've been. Then he gives them a vision. Before you is a new land, flowing with milk and honey, a new possibility to become God's people. A narrative and a vision. And then he gives them a choice. Choose this day which gods you will serve. I'll translate that, because most of us don't believe in a multiplicity of small g gods. But I think he's saying, choose this day the narrative that you will follow. You can serve the idols of your old culture, the ideals, or at least the realities of your old culture, or the godlets of your slave narrative, or you can follow the God who liberated you. Remember the family history that was most recent for them that is going through their mind. The first one is, for a generation and a half, we've been wandering in the wilderness and just having fights with lots of people who hate us. It's been a very precarious living. And for the generation before that, there was a family narrative of slavery, which basically said, yeah, it sucked. We worked for Pharaoh, and it was awful, and we were told we didn't count, and we weren't anyone, but we got 3 square meals a day. It was safe. One of the complaints that kept coming up, delightfully cynical, that the people kept yelling at Moses was, were there no graves in Egypt that you brought us out here to die? Let us go back. Let us go back to the story of abuse. Let us go back to the story of being dehumanized. Let us go back to the story where we are not fully people, but we knew how to survive. It was awful and secure. It was abusive, but we knew how to live there. Joshua gives them a narrative, a vision, and a choice. Choose this day which narrative you will serve, which gods you will serve. And finally, he says, this is what I'm doing. This is where I'm going. As for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. As for me and my house, we will serve the family narrative of the God who loves and liberates. The God who called us from being no people to God's people, from brokenness to wholeness, from abuse to being fully human. Is it safe? Maybe not. But it's good. As for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. So my family has had Netflix for a few years now, and I've never done a binge watch until a couple weeks ago. Barb was away on a long trip. Kids were not around, and frankly, late evenings were really sad and lonely. So I did a few nights of binge watching a show called The Good Place, which is kind of a C.S. Lewis kind of thing of some people who show up in the afterlife and figuring out who and what and where they are, and it's got some interesting theological and philosophical happenings. But I was reading about that show, and then I read that Netflix is going to soon have another kind of show, which I've never heard of. Maybe it happened before, but they're going to allow you to soon choose how the narrative of the show you're watching goes. It will be an interactive thing. And I guess Black Mirror will be the show. I think I've seen one of those episodes. Black Mirror will be the show that happens at. So at various points in the script, while you're watching, there will be a choice to make for the main character, to choose option A or option B. And if you use B, that sends the storyline this direction. If you choose A, it sends the story outline that. I used to have books when I was a kid that allowed you to do that as well. What's that?
Choose your own adventure.
Choose your own adventure. Yes. That's what I should have entitled this thing. Choose your own adventure. So they're going to be doing choose your own adventure for a TV show, which is kind of interesting. I actually wrote that down here. You choose your own adventure right there. So you choose your story. You choose your narrative. If you run through one set of choices, you have to say no to certain other choices. If you run through one set of choices, you can watch. And this is cool. If you don't like how that one ends, you can go back and choose A next time. It's kind of neat. I wish life could go like that, huh? That didn't work out very well. Let's try this. It's sort of like Groundhog Day for binge watching. Now, part of me thinks this is just a gimmick, but part of me wonders. I wonder if people who might, are younger folks who start getting used to shows being this multi-dimensional way of doing things, I wonder if it might help younger people learn how to let go of narratives that no longer liberate us or make us free. But in any case, it's going to be really interesting to have, at least for our TV part of our lives, we can choose our own narrative. We can choose our own adventure. We can choose the gods whom we will serve, which means saying yes to some options and saying no to some others. And this being a sermon, it means I turn it into a metaphor for how do we choose God rather than the idols of our culture. We live in a culture that says 227 different spaghetti sauces on the shelf will make your life better and more meaningful. Or how do we choose a narrative that offers life over the sacred yet perhaps destructive stories of our own family histories? And those stories are sacred, even the destructive ones. I was always amazed, because I had a pretty good childhood, I was always amazed with kids who were on our bike trips whose family histories were from hell, how incredibly loyal they were, not only to the family, but to the family history. And you could see how a choreography had been written for them, and they were being good, loyal kids and following that narrative. Even a narrative that says, you're dumb, you're mean, you're a piece of crap. And by golly, those kids are going to live right into that script because they're good and loyal. So they're sacred. That is a sacred script, even if it's unholy. Yes, sir? I guess it's kind of like that, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. A little like Stockholm Syndrome. Sometimes choosing God over the idols of our culture means we have to have an astringent cleansing in order not to be confronted with multitudes of meaningless possibilities, but a clear clarion call to choose a reality that offers life, a narrative that offers full humanity. Choose this day whom you will serve, the idols of your ancestors or the deities of the folk across the river follow. But as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. Sometimes our choices aren't made so much in our head as much as by our behaviors. I've read a number of times where actions change minds much more effectively than minds change actions. And sometimes it's the actions that help us say yes to God, saying yes to a new narrative, embodying a new story, living out what it is to say yes to the God of life and liberation and love. I really need to write Grandma while she's not feeling well. I really need to send that check to UMCOR or Amnesty International or Habitat for Humanity. Next week, I'll put the cigarettes away. Someday, I'm going to turn off the TV and play soccer with my kids. One of these days, I'm going to start doing a Bible study. When I retire, I'll have more time to do church work or do Habitat for Humanity or Meals on Wheels. Someday, sometime, I'll do this. I'll say yes then. One of these days, I'm going to reconcile with my sister. One of these days, I'm going to be better. But one of these days isn't forever. And sometimes not to choose is to choose. Sometimes not to act is to act. Are people familiar with the Myers-Briggs personality thing? I'm an INTP, which means I like to keep my options open. INTPs are always waiting for more data to come in before we make a final decision. We're waiting for that day when I get all the information I need. But time doesn't go on forever. Life doesn't go on forever. There will not always be a tomorrow to be able to get enough data to make that decision. Sometimes we just have to make a decision and live from that moment on with what we've chosen. You choose B, it means A isn't a possibility and you don't get a Netflix do-over. And if our decision is to follow a narrative of life, if our decision is to follow Yahweh, if our decision is to follow Jesus, then what we've chosen is a way of love and freedom and faithful service, of right relationship and deepening relationship with self and with neighbor, with the world, and with God. Possibility of transformation. It's not a Netflix do-over. But saying yes to God means you do get the opportunity to say goodbye to a narrative that is destructive. It's still there. It's still part of you, but you don't have to let it control you. You can say yes to a narrative, a story of life and love and liberation that can bring you to transformation and healing and wholeness. That's what a yes does. That's what living it out does. We do that as individuals. We do that as families. And we do that as a congregation. And I feel like Essex Center United Methodist Church is in a place not dissimilar to Joshua and the people on the edge of a new land. Because we stand on the border of a new unmapped land called God's future. And a bunch of us are looking at a book called Canoeing the Mountains that is giving us some tools at looking at the lay of the land and how it is that we enter into it. We also have a lot of us who are learning what our family story is in a class called Living the Questions, and if I super invite you to be a part of that, if you haven't, we gather on, well, each class gathers on a Monday, one on even Mondays, one on odd Mondays. The Living the Questions class is an amazing way to see the story of God's people. If you don't know the stories, it's a great way to learn them, and if you do know the stories, this is a place where you can look at them, reinterpret them, question them, and see how it is we approach them. And it may not be the same way that it was at the church you grew up in. It's called Living the Questions because what we're called to do is question those narratives and make them life-giving for us. So I invite you tomorrow evening to come be a part of that if you would like. So here's the thing. We are on the edge of an unmapped future. We don't have a map. We don't have the answers. Nobody knows how to do church in the 21st century. But we do know who we are. And we do know whose we are. And we know our story, or we are learning our story. And we go into God's future wide awake, curious, and ready to adventure. I have a poem I shared with you guys a few years ago, and I just want to share it again. The adventure is sometimes very quiet, and I want to share one place it looks like. It's a poem called Susanna by Ann Porter. Nobody in the hospital could tell the age of the old woman who was called Susanna. I knew she spoke some English, and that she was an immigrant out of a little country trampled by armies. Because she had no visitors, I would stop by to see her, but she was always sleeping. All I could do was get out her comb and carefully untangle the tangles in her hair. One day I was beside her when she woke up, opening small dark eyes of a surprising clearness. She looked at me and said, "You want to know the truth?" I answered, "Yes." She said, "It's something that my mother told me. There's not a single inch of our whole body that the Lord does not love." And then she went back to sleep. That's a narrative we can go forward with, huh? That's an adventure we can do together. There's not a single inch of our whole body that the Lord does not love. Choose this day who you will serve. As for me and my house, we'll do our best to choose the Lord. Amen.